Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Yes, time to roll the Jaffas down the aisles and chew the popcorn with our friends Tristan Feidler and Simon Morado. Tristan?
Hello.
Simon?
Good morning.
You know, you do sound deeply similar to me before I met your faces with different...
compositions?
Yeah, different compositions. Let's go with that. Let's go with that. Tristan, I don't know that we've ever done this before, so thank you.
It's a real pleasure, Danae. It's great to chat to you and to chat about movies, and particularly one I think that people are anticipating and maybe people are fans of the original, because we're looking at Top Gun.
Well, with this newcomer, some bloke called Tom Cruise.
Tim Cruise.
Tim Cruise.
What do we have here?
Yeah, here I thought we were special.
Fellas, this here's Bagman.
Hangman.
Oh, whatever.
What the hell kind of mission is this?
Everyone here is the best there is. Who the hell are they going to get to teach us?
Captain Pete Maverick Mitchell. Let me be perfectly blunt. You are not my first choice. You are here at the request of Admiral Kazansky, a.k.a. Iceman. He seems to think that you have something left to offer the Navy. What that is, I can't imagine.
With all due respect, sir, I'm not a teacher. Just want to manage the expectations.
The last great Hollywood star standing?
Yeah, I would say in a way, like this, and this film is a kind of a testament to his star power, because I think there would have been a period of time where if you said to Tom Cruise, let's do a Top Gun sequel, he'd be like, I'm more than that. I'm not, you know, because it was a big defining role for his career in the 1980s. And I think he's, you know, had time to prove himself and do other things, and definitely at a stage where he needs, I guess, box office hits, and he has already the Mission Impossible franchise to come back, it seems like a good time to do it. I mean, are you both fans of the original 1986 Tony Scott classic?
Simon?
Well, I hadn't seen it until last week. It's one of those films that I think osmotically you kind of absorb it through pop culture without having seen it. And it was never a film that was esteemed enough that I felt like, okay, well, that's one I have to catch up on. You know,
exactly.
I kind of thought, I've got it. Like, I've kind of got it. And then, you know, anticipating this new movie, I thought, well, I should see it. Why not? Watched it. There wasn't more to it, really, than what I had already absorbed. But I did enjoy it. And it was a film that I wasn't upset. Or it wasn't a film that, even though it is sort of jingoistic, it is very much baked into that time and place of the 1980s. It's not a film that I thought, oh, why is that a classic? I kind of got why it's such a beloved pop cultural artifact.
What about you, Danae? Are you a fan of Top Gun?
Well, this is where I reveal, if we don't already know, that I'm a little bit older than you. So I fall into one of two categories. Either seen it 18 times, love all the music, had the big hair, or... Are you kidding me? No, I haven't seen it. No, I haven't seen it ever.
Wow, and yeah.
But like Simon, I did consider sneaking in a little watch recently. Didn't get around to it. Don't think that will stop me from seeing the big one, the new one, on the big screen. Because it's a big screen film, right, Tristan?
Yeah, well, that's Tom Cruise's thing now. And there's an interesting Hollywood Reporter article you can read about the kind of tussles he's had with Paramount about Mission Impossible, because I think there's a, you know, they have Paramount Plus, the streaming service, so they're very interested in, like, premiering stuff on that. But Tom Cruise is definitely a cinema only kind of guy, and so yeah, we have this new film that was supposed to come out a few years back, but obviously is delayed, and it's a follow up to Top Gun. And it's a film that I grew up watching a lot. It's kind of a thin film in a way, but it's got great images. Tony Scott and the Jerry Bruckheimer, Don Simpson production line, the, you know, the soundtrack, the images, the MTV vibe, the, you know, you say esteem, steam. There's lots of steam in the scenes. There's all this smoke in the back room, and, you know, the volleyball scenes happen.
Oh, I thought you meant the homoeroticism.
Well, that's very big as well. And so it's interesting to see this version of it, which pretty much mirrors the older film, but, you know, is quite different as well in terms of the writing and the directing. Joseph Kosinski, who's worked with Tom Cruise before on the film...
Oblivion.
Thank you. One of the ones that...
How could you forget Oblivion?
How could I forget Oblivion? A film that, so he's a talented director. He also worked on the firefighter film Only the Brave, which I quite liked. And we pick up with Pete Mitchell Maverick, the test fighter pilot who has not progressed in his career. He's a test pilot through and through. We see him in the opening kind of recreate scenes from The Right Stuff where he goes Mach 10 in this very stealth jet bomber, much to the chagrin of his superior officers, in this instance played by Ed Harris. And
of course. You know, I'm sorry, of course.
You can't have a film without Ed Harris in his naval suit. So this film kind of pitches the idea that he is coming back to Top Gun, not to be a student, mind you. That would have been a good idea for a film, though, a back-to-school kind of version of it. But no, he is the teacher. He has come back to teach a new class of hotshots to basically do a mission, this kind of mission that's laid out. And this is what I liked about it. There was a clear objective. It was a mission movie, much like Guns of Navarone, all those old World War II classics. And so he has to reconcile with, you know, his Maverick ways with these new Maverick types. And particularly the big tension is that one of the pilots, wouldn't you know, is the son of Goose, his former wingman, played by Anthony Edwards. Here, the son is also a test fighter pilot, played by Miles Teller. And so that's the kind of the tension of, like, you know, and spoiler, Goose did pass away in the old Top Gun movie. So dealing with that tragedy and how that affects his relationship with his kind of pseudo son in this way. And there are other characters in the mix, including Jennifer Connelly, who shows up as a kind of sassy bar owner who completes the kind of love romance section of the film. And look, this film is also adamant about, like, shooting in the jets, you know, having the actors experience the real G's and kind of having that immersive quality, which makes it a big screen, I guess, must. So I've seen this film, Simon has seen this film, and it's interesting to think about it, to go without seeing the original film and whether you'll get all the references or not. But Simon, I mean, do you think it works on its own?
I do think it works on its own. And what I love about, you know, how you described it is there is a clear objective. In many ways, it felt like a heist movie because, and even now, I won't, because it'd be bad radio, but I can picture and describe what they actually have to do in their jets. Mm-hmm. It's such a clear, and it was co-written by Christopher McQuarrie, who writes the Mission Impossible films, is sort of a key collaborator with Tom Cruise. And I think they understand that simplicity is key here. It's about watching these young guns trained to be better fighter pilots under the charisma of Tom Cruise, and they got to pull off a task.
Are they as handsome as the Ocean's 11 franchise? I'm thinking of heist movies.
Well, no, because Carl Reiner and Elliot Gould just had that unmistakable sex appeal. But what I do love about this new cast, maybe Miles Teller aside, who is an actor that I sort of don't really enjoy too much on the screen, there is a lot of charisma, and Glenn Powell is great as the very cocky, you know, the basically frat boy pilot, and he's such a compelling and fun actor, and I've loved him in a number of projects. But there is a lot of charisma among the actors here. Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise. And we talked a few weeks ago about the idea of vulgar auteurism. You know, like Michael Bay, he's an auteur, right? Because he has a style. And watching Top Gun and seeing that Tony Scott film, realizing, wow, he defined a kind of Bruckheimer-style filmmaking that would go on for another 20, 30 years. This movie kind of strays from that Tony Scott of it all, but it's a Tom Cruise auteur movie. You know, it's very much of a piece with what he's been doing over the last 10 years with these realistic stunts. He kind of plays the same character, Tom Cruise. But I'm enjoying that, Tristan. I don't know about you. I really enjoy this film because of that.
Yes, that's a good point. And like I've read another review that kind of criticized the film for kind of, because it is about a character dealing with his middle age and the mm-hmm. the fact that he's no longer like needed in this world, that he's like, you know, too much of a maverick to but like I don't want really introspection from Tom Cruise. I don't think he's capable of it. I mean, he's done some great supporting turns, but what I love about Tom Cruise and what I love about this film, which won't be shared by everyone, I'm sure, is that ego of mm-hmm. it. Like, the film constantly reminds you that Maverick is awesome and that Tom Cruise is awesome, even though it's so many years, so many decades later. And that's what I love about Jack Reacher. That's what I love about some of those films from the 80s, is that kind of star... ego kind mm-hmm. of, you know, it's all geared
up. It was
up.
Big.
Yeah, it's all geared up to support the idea of Tom Cruise being a viable action star.
There were Sly Stallone, Bruce Willis, Arnold Schwarzenegger, but Tom Cruise had his own little oeuvre over here, didn't he?
Well, that's right, and he was making films while Sly Stallone and Schwarzenegger were doing, like, Eraser and all those other kind of, you know, personality-driven films. He was then straying into Magnolia and Eyes Wide Shut, and he was doing those character pieces, those strange pieces, working with really interesting directors. No disrespect to Joseph Kosinski or Christopher McQuarrie, but he has basically, you know, he has a house style now, you know? And so you know when you go into this film, I'm going to see the latest Tom Cruise movie, which is probably what people wanted when they saw Top Gun back in the day. So I think it fulfills that. It is absolutely still a fairly jingoistic movie. It probably romanticizes the military-industrial complex more than you'd like. But as far as an action movie goes, which we haven't really touched on, it's pretty thrilling. And I did really love seeing this on the big screen and experiencing that high G kind of energy that you get from it.
But strangely enough, I have so many questions. You know, how big was the budget? How much money does he make?
Well, look, I mean...
And more.
Yeah, I like this film. I would recommend it. I think people who are into Top Gun will like it because it mirrors the narrative, the moments of Top Gun. But it adds its own quality to it and it sort of is... You know, I think it's quite well written and directed. And to me, I mean, you don't get many references to the old film, but it was great to see for a scene Val Kilmer redo the role of Iceman. And Val Kilmer's had health issues. You can see the documentary Val on Amazon Prime. So, yeah, I thought that was quite moving to see him back in this film. But it's out in cinemas now. I'm sure people can experience the vision, the action, the Tom Cruise of it all, but it is a bit different to the 80s film had original music made for it. This one has a Lady Gaga love ballad, but we don't have this. Like, I think it's interesting how like in the montage scenes they use like old rock and roll tunes rather than like newly created pop hits.
Yeah, well, we're gonna have a little of this because we can. Of course, it's an ego project. It's called Top Gun. And that's where wingman became a popular phrase. It was a defining, oh my God, defining moment of Hollywood in a time when Hollywood was different. And people want to be bringing people back into cinemas to see big budget gloss. I'm just going to talk all over Harold. What is this?
This is the Top Gun anthem by Harold Faltermeyer with guitar by Stephen Stevens. Yeah. So this is to make people remember Top Gun experience
it's the Rocky theme, but it's an anthem because it's Top Gun, so it's one better than a theme. We'll have a little of this and some more Movie Squad in a moment.
Just the world.
Time for Movie Squad Part 2 with Simon and Tristan. And Danae filling in for Taylor this morning. I think in my haste to turn off Harold Faltermeyer and Steve Stevens, I may have hit too many buttons. We were talking about Top Gun Maverick, another generation of boy children called Maverick. Maybe some girl children too. Mav's a big name for dogs, for, you know, boys of a certain age.
Well, maybe we'll get some more roosters. There's a phoenix. What are some of the names that get, call signs that get thrown into this new mix?
Phoenix would be, that would be up there.
Yeah, I can't remember, because John Hamm is in it as his superior officer, and he gets like Cyclone.
Wow, we didn't even talk about John Hamm's performance in this film. Probably for the best that we don't talk about that. But we're moving on to still the big screen, still a cinema release, but a smaller scale film. We're going to talk about the Finnish horror movie Hatching now, which is opening in select cinemas. It's sort of the third film, Tristan, this year that we're covering about young women, or in this case, a young girl, discovering supernatural powers, or rather discovering, her womanhood, or going through puberty and seeing that realized through the realm of horror. We had Hellbender earlier in the year, and a couple of weeks ago we reviewed The Innocents. The Hatching is slightly different in that it's not a horror film in the sense of jump scares and just general, horror, like the idea that you'd be hiding behind a pillow while watching this movie. But it is a sort of gory film. It's something of like a Grimm's fairy tale, and definitely indebted to the films of Guillermo del Toro. So I think Pan's Labyrinth would be the best comparison for this movie. But it is a Finnish film, and it focuses on a young 12-year-old girl called Tinja, who's an aspiring gymnast. She's good, not great, but being pushed by her mother to be perfect, because her mother is that most horrifying of film characters, a mumfluencer. She has a blog where she basically, it's called like Our Perfect Life. And she films these florid videos of her, her husband, her son, and young Tinja basically floricking around in all white outfits, and her kind of vibe is saying, look how perfect our life is, I can tell you how to be perfect too. But of course, when the cameras are off, we see how imperfect their world is. The mother is openly having an affair, the father's very timid and disconnected, the son is quite aggressive and a little bit annoying, and Tinja's really struggling. You know, she's a lovely young girl, but she's basically being manipulated and almost treated like a friend by her mother when she's not being overbearing. And her mother kind of describes her love life with her, her male mistress, effectively. And so things are definitely not healthy in this household. And they take a turn for the worse when a bird flies into the house. The mother catches it, kills it, and Tinja later finds an egg that belonged to the bird, brings it into her bed, tries to, you know, take care of it. And as the pressure kind of bottles up within Tinja, the egg grows and grows until it's larger than even her. And early in the film, the egg does hatch, and what emerges but a creature I won't describe, because that's one of the pleasures of the film, but a creature that starts enacting Tinja's burgeoning rage and starts fulfilling her wildest desires, but also things she doesn't want, because, you know, she's a nice person. She doesn't want to see ill harm come to others, but this creature starts doing it for her anyway. Now, Tristan, you haven't seen Hatching yet, but this genre, you know, we've looked at a lot of films like this, but you can tie it back to Carrie, you can tie it back to many films, Pan's Labyrinth, as I said. How do you feel about this genre and horror being used to convey the trauma of childhood and pubescent nature?
Well, I mean, there's a very rich history in that, you know, the fairy tales that we grow up with and that are kind of like sanitized by Disney, they have those kind of the original incarnations are like warnings or messages to children and are quite, you know, grim, you know, to use the pun, about, you know, what happens in those original fairy tales. And, yeah, so I haven't seen this film, but the imagery of it, the main kind of, like, promoted image of the girl with the large egg kind of that's bigger than her, it's very, you know, it has some very kind of... just strong thematic, you know. I can see that this would be a film that invests in metaphor and what you're describing about the plot and the perfect life of the family. I mean, this kind of feels to me like, in the tradition of Carrie, but also sounds like something that you might see in a 90s music video of kind of like the manicured, you know, perfect suburban kind of experience, and then something just underneath coming in and disrupting it all. So I'm very curious about this. I'm also interested into whether this fits within, it's not an A24 film, but it feels like the kind of thing that you would see released by A24. Does it fit in that subgenre?
No, it doesn't, but I do want to say, I can already tell you're picturing the Black Hole Sun music video by Soundgarden. And A24 horror films, you know, we've talked about a number of them over the years, you know, but The Witch, give me another one. What's
Lamb.
The idea being that they're horror films in name only, you know. They create dread, but it's not until the final 5 minutes that horror comes to town. That is not the case here. This is not a slow burn horror film. It is like, again, it's a grim fairy tale, but the gore comes often and early, and it is quite gross. There are some things in here that are like, oh, bloody hell, you know. Like, so it's not one of those films where you'd walk out going, ah, they don't, you know, it doesn't really get going until the final 5 minutes. But again, it's not a terrifying movie, and by design, it's not meant to be terrifying. It's just meant to be this really interesting metaphor. Obviously, these maternal themes, the egg, going through puberty, they all kind of come to a head in really interesting fashion. Danae, I think you've got a stronger stomach than Taylor does, for example. No, you don't.
No.
Okay, so why is that? So a horror film just out
Bambi,
of your...
You know, like just trauma, not interested.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. I saw a German film this week that was a preview of the German Film Festival that's coming up, and called The Forger, and it's World War II trauma. And I like seeing something like that every now and then to take me out of a comfort zone, but that's not why I go to the cinema generally. But I think I was thinking about it, reflecting on it, and sometimes seeing a film in a different language to my own with no expectations. I have no idea of these actors. I didn't really know what the story was going to be. Makes it easier to be in that moment there. But if I know I'm going to see something that's going to rattle me, I'm rattled before I even start.
Well, that's really interesting. And when we discussed The Innocence a few weeks ago, I did note that, you know, since becoming a dad, I'm definitely much more hesitant, you know. It's that cliche of films of children in peril. They actually, you know, I do find them quite difficult now. And that film was quite harrowing and unpleasant because of that. But this film still has that remove, or that colourful storytelling to it, that it's still kind of fun. And it's yes, there are children in peril, but it's not so horrendously unnerving. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's telling a larger story here. And I'll credit the director, Hannah Bergholm, who I think this is her first film or second film at best. You know, it does come from that female gaze and perspective. So I think there's a lot going on under the surface of Hatching that I appreciated. So it's not just, oh gosh, am I going to have to watch this poor 12-year-old girl going through the ringer? It's an entertaining film that does have horror and body horror elements to it. So you're going to need a strong stomach, but I don't think it's one that you'll walk out feeling so rattled by because of that horrific nature.
Hatching or Hatchling?
Hatching.
Yeah.
Hatching. Okay. Hatchling would be a good name as well, but we'll leave that's available. that domain is currently available. So Hatching, it's in select cinemas now. Check your listings. It's not going to be every hour on the hour like Top Gun Maverick. So, you know, you're going to have to be selective and maybe move quickly, but certainly a film that will also hopefully find good life on streaming and one that, because it is sort of set outside of time, you know, beyond the fact that the mum runs a blog, I think it's a film that in 10 years' time will still feel kind of relevant.
And her blog is called Our Perfect Lives.
Yes. It was a bit on the nose, but I'm also chalking that up to perhaps the Finnish to English translation maybe just took some shortcuts.
Is there something in there that is decidedly Finnish that you haven't seen or don't see often in film?
Well, I think, and the same with The Innocence as well, which was a Norwegian film, the idea of children in peril. You know, and again, I was just saying how I'm not really into that at the moment, but you know, American films or Hollywood movies, because they do want to make it more accessible, it is rare for them to maybe do something that pushes those boundaries a little bit, unless it is an A24 film. That's where I'll give them the credit. So you get sort of Stranger Things in America, mm-hmm. which is fun and good, but, you know, the kids are going to be fine, mm-hmm. right? When you're watching a Finnish, Scandi film, maybe the kids won't be fine.
Maybe not. The Hatching and Top Gun Maverick.
Yes, yes. So we do it all on Movie Squad, yep. The small films, the big films. You know.
Diversity, diversity, diversity.
Today, was The Forger good? We can't leave that.
Yeah, it was excellent. It's a hard story to watch, but it was compelling. A story of, surprise, surprise, a forger, but about resistance to the Nazis in 1942-43 and based on a true story that somehow always kind of reduces the impact when I hear that phrase. But in this case, that's, worth knowing.
That's interesting, yeah. Knowing that, like, what you're seeing really happened and probably happened in more dramatic and awful fashion.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What are you seeing next? Am I allowed to ask that?
No one's ever asked that before.
Yeah, no. I mean,
what are we seeing next? I can't even remember.
Well, I guess the next big blockbuster on the horizon is Jurassic World, the end of this new trilogy, which I'm not that excited about. The main thing, it is nice to see the original cast, so Sam Neill, Laura Dern, who has not returned to any of them since the first one. So,
right.
Yeah.
And that's right. I'm reviewing Asghar Farhadi's A Hero. So Asghar Farhadi, great Iranian director, made A Separation, one of the great films. Everybody knows more recently The Past. This film, a bit controversial because of a plagiarism lawsuit that was lobbied against him, but played the Cannes Film Festival last year, and he's always got something interesting to say. So really keen to watch that one.
As do you, Simon and Tristan, and you'll be back, I suspect, with our Taylor Strano next Friday. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.